The Sunday Morning Linux Review, starring Mary Talmadge, Tony Venus, and Matt Anders as the Beaver.
This is episode 71.
Bombardment from Space.
That's right. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, those were some crazy videos.
They were, man. 900 people were injured by that. Can you believe that?
In case you were under a rock this week, the Earth was attacked by meteorites.
Well, meteors. No, it was meteor. Oh, a meteor. Because when it's in space, it's an asteroid. When it enters the atmosphere, it's a meteor. And it becomes a meteorite if it strikes
the ground.
Oh.
Mr. Science.
I told you, on the History Channel, I watched a ton of shows.
Yeah.
Well, good. That's good. That one video of the guy driving, and that it just looked like it was going to, I thought it was going to strike much closer than it did, just from the perspective of it. But
yeah, if you just search meteor right now on YouTube, you'll get all sorts of Russian videos of meteor, this one meteor coming through and
Russia is like a magnet for that. Back in 1908, they had that big giant one that happened out in Siberia.
Well, isn't it because they're the largest landmass of a scene, of a, like a, you know, a certain...
I just want to say...
You're right.
I think it's the outer space aliens throwing rocks at us, and they're trying to get the commies.
That could be.
Oh, man.
Okay. All right. Well, let's catch up.
Yeah? What I did this week was made 3 trips in one day to our remote data center.
Three trips in one day.
In the morning.
You had so much fun. Did it again and again.
The night guy went out.
Third time was the charm.
The night guy went out and he racked this 6 server cluster.
Okay.
Okay. So then when I came in the morning, my job was to what we call go-go it, which is get all the software installed and everything.
Yeah, so which had then become a cluster.
Almost. So right. I go-go'd everything, and then after the go-go, the load balancer wouldn't come back up.
Oh.
So what I thought it was that there's a setting in the BIOS that you have to turn off, otherwise it hangs on errors. It doesn't just report the errors, like the fact that there's no keyboard attached because it's headless.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't report. It hangs and says F1 to continue. So I thought somebody just forgot to turn that off. So I drove all the way out there. And I got out
there. How far did you drive?
It's a 32-mile round trip.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
So I get all the way out there, and it's not...
Mm-hmm.
The fact that it's waiting on F1. It is waiting on F1, but it's waiting on F1 because it's got bad RAM in it.
Oh, no.
So then I had to drive all the way back.
Didn't you use that IRAC? Sorry. Oh, that was last week.
IRAC.
So then I had to drive all the way back.
Yeah.
Get RAM. Go all the way back out and install the RAM. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Come all the way back. And then I ran the go-go, and they all ran on all 6 servers fine.
Okay.
And then...
Life was good.
No.
I mean, for a short period of time there, life was good.
No, I'm sorry. I'd already go-go'd them.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
But, so then I had to run Puppet D on all of them to get them in Puppet and all the stuff, stuff installed.
Yep.
Except then one of them wouldn't come back after running Puppet D.
Not the same one, was it?
No. It was a different server.
Mm.
So I went out there, and for some reason, this one was just sitting there on the F1 prompt. I have no idea why. It didn't do it before. Mm-hmm. So I hit F1, and I made sure it was turned off in the BIOS, and I came back, and it was but 3 trips.
Oh, my goodness.
It took me all day to get these servers. Normally, it takes just a couple hours to get the servers set up.
Yeah.
It took me all day, my entire 12-hour shift. I finished them up just as my 12-hour shift.
So how do you report that, like, on your time card? Because
I don't make a time card.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I was just kind of curious because... You probably have a list of things, that are on your plate for today to do.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this thing suddenly appears, which takes
over and got them done. It was one other server installed.
Okay.
So I stayed over and finished that up. But
Oh, that would just, I'd be, hopefully you have some good music to listen to.
No.
Or podcasts. Something.
NPR.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah, that's good enough.
Yeah, that is good. That's good enough. Cool. All things considered.
Well, Drew and Mike until either 10 or 11, whenever okay. they decide to stop broadcasting on NPR.
I can't stand them.
Anyway. I love Drew and Mike. Drew and Mike rule.
I'm sure that if Tony doesn't like them, I probably don't like them either.
No, I don't think you would.
Anyway, all right.
The Riff 101.1.
Yeah, I listen to Riff other than the first, like, 8 hours in the morning. Because they're on for 6 or 8 hours.
No, they're on from 6 o'clock in the morning until,
like, noon. 11.
Well, no. They're supposed to end the show at 10.
Yeah.
But most of the time they don't end the show till after 11.
Right. I've been out driving around and I hear them still at 11 o'clock. And anyway.
Not happy.
And
but anyway.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow. They do let some bits run long. And I sit there going, just end it. Nobody thinks this is funny.
All right. On that note, so go on. So what did you do, Tony, this week?
All right. Well, this week I fixed our problem with Matt's channel not showing up in the streaming.
Woohoo!
How did you do that? I mean, is it something that you can explain?
It comes from, I would understand. It comes from the Department of
Defense.
The things made now these days are not as good as back then.
Oh, that
so
department!
I gotcha. Yeah, I had a cable that is maybe 10 years old. And, it was faulty. It was black. It looked fairly new.
Mm-hmm.
And the cables I'm using now are probably 45 years old and they're working better.
Wow.
It's a pair of cables off my parents', turntable when they first got married in 70. So, yeah. So
cool.
They're working great now.
Good.
And,
yeah, Matt's a happy camper over there.
Yeah, everybody can hear you now.
Yeah. Aren't you lucky?
we were just saying that.
And then we're now streaming using Dark Ice on the computer, so we can set up redundancies and streaming to multiple servers, although currently we're still using just one server.
And how did the getting Dark Ice running work out for you?
Oh, man.
That's another little story.
I spent all day I downloaded the sources for Dark Ice because I couldn't find the app package. And then
You were calling it Black Ice, or is that something different?
I did. It's Dark Ice.
Okay.
And then I tried to compile it, and it was airing out saying that it didn't have any of the codecs installed. So I downloaded all the codecs sources, compiled those, and did make install and blah, blah, blah. And then tried to run the Dark Ice compile again, and it still said it wasn't there. And I'm like, what's going on? And in the middle, I just typed the name accidentally, just like my fingers. And it started running. I'm like, what? Well, apparently, a couple months ago, I installed it and didn't realize it. I forgot about it. So we're good to go.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Wow. So that was probably a little tough there for a while.
Right.
But having it show up when you typed it in was a nice thing. Are you looking?
That's no.
Oh, you need some coffee?
No, it's all right. So what I want to do is I want to be redundancy streaming on multiple continents. So right now we're streaming from somebody's home server in Indianapolis or near Indianapolis.
Indiana.
Yep, in Indiana. And then I want to stream from Australia and from Europe so that we'll be worldwide.
Ken's going to let us use that one in Europe, right?
I haven't talked to him about it. It was the guys from...
Hey, Ken.
From, I thought it was Ken. Sorry,
Australia.
Ken.
Crayon.
Oh, Crayon in Australia,
yeah. We could use the KPO server. So I got to email him and get the stuff for that.
Mm-hmm.
Then we'll start streaming to Australia, and we'll get the Asia market from there. And then if we can use
HBR, he's got that running in Australia, maybe it's not bandwidth in Australia is expensive.
Yeah,
expensive.
Huh.
So
yeah, we talked
maybe
about that.
Check
a couple
with him first and see what his bandwidth is right. just, I mean, maybe he's being a nice guy and not really, you know what I mean?
Oh,
but
yeah.
we don't want to be a burden on his pocketbook, you know?
Right. Yeah, I agree. All right. Cool. So what'd you do this, Mary, this week?
Well, you know, I think a couple weeks ago we talked about Calligra. I think Calligra Suite, and Matt, of course, you, Matt very, very tactfully said, who uses that? So I thought, you know, I'm gonna try to use Calligra Suite as my main office suite for, you know, word processing, et cetera, for a week. So I started to do that. I think it was a couple days ago. I just thought, you know, I'm going to do that. And then report on
how badly did it fall apart?
Well, I'll tell you what. I do like the fact that, yeah, as I said before, that the tools and things are off to the side. But I was working on a document. I had several documents open, as I typically do. And I go back and forth as I'm putting, the show notes and, my show notes and stuff together. I had then flipped over to Firefox and was looking for something. And suddenly I noticed that Calligra Office was no more. I mean, Calligra, what is it? Words, I think, was no more. It was not open.
Oh.
It had crashed. And, I had done really nothing. I added, I think, a footer and a header. I had, added a little toolbar to the top.
Did it auto recover?
No.
Ah.
So, that was just, it didn't for me anyway, and it seems to me that should be like something that's automatically in place, and I don't know if maybe it wasn't activated or something.
It's automatically in place in LibreOffice.
Exactly, because when LibreOffice, I've had problems and I've had to shut things down prematurely, abruptly, I've been able to recover my stuff. But that wasn't the case. So I ended up submitting a bug report, and I kind of explained what happened. And then it got renamed to Crash on Autosave. So apparently what was going on is that it was autosaving at the time and it crashed, except it crashed before it autosaved.
Right. When autosave starts, it crashes.
Yeah, exactly. So my stuff wasn't saved. So I continued to use it, but what I then did is I saved it every 5 or 10 minutes. I just click save. I mean, no big deal, but still it's it was disappointing. But I'm going to continue to try using it.
I reiterate, who uses it besides the developers?
Yeah, well, Kexi is the little database program that I want to try to use.
Is Calligra lighter weight than Libre?
Yeah, I think it is.
No. It doesn't use Java, but that's about the only advantage it has.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking some of the distros that don't include the LibreOffice may include that. Right?
Well, it's KDE. Calligra? If you install Calligra, you're pulling down KDE 80% of KDE anyway.
Right. Okay.
But in LibreOffice, didn't they release 4.0?
Yeah, they did. And it's come a long way, too. They rewrote a lot of the code base, cleaned it all up.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a lot.
I was tempted to install it, but...
I wasn't.
What do you use?
I have switched over to Google Docs for everything. But the one thing I'm finding annoying with Google Docs is I cannot format part of the page. Formatting, I'm sure there's got to be a way to do it where I can, like, just bring in, like, the margins on this one paragraph and stuff. And it's really annoying that I can't find it.
What you should look for is the something called a section. Create a section and then apply those changes only to that section. See if that's there because, in my day job, I use Word and that's how they do it. So there's, and I think, and I should really look in LibreOffice. I haven't really had an opportunity to do that, but I think there's a way to do that. You have to kind of designate this portion.
No, in LibreOffice, you can do it by simply dragging tab stops around.
Well, yeah, but that's not the best way to do
it. Well, you highlight the paragraph you want to do it, and you just drag those tab stops.
You don't even have to highlight the paragraph. Just click so that you're on
that paragraph. Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But in Google Docs, I can't find out how to do it. I can't figure out how to do it.
Well, here's the thing is what you do, you can insert a manual break in LibreOffice. Of course, this is Google Docs. So look for something about sections or manual breaks.
I read the margin section and I don't know, I'll have to read it again, but
okay.
It was very annoying.
Mm-hmm. And where are your Google Docs saved? Do you save them like on your PC?
No, they're in Drive.
Oh, they're Google Drive? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crawled by the NSA.
And I even moved all my all my old LibreOffice versions of the documents to Drive.
Okay.
So, you know what I the only
do
reason
you have a copy on your local?
No.
So if you're not connected to the internet, are you? Can you continue to be productive?
No.
No. Yeah, that's a downfall.
When am I ever not connected to the internet?
When you're driving. I'm just joking.
No, but it's a good one.
But in my previous job, I used to work on my laptop while I was driving a lot.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Anyway, but see, that's why I like services like Dropbox because, yeah, it's up there. But it's also here.
Yeah. And, well, you can do that with Drive now, can't you?
I don't know. I just moved it all to
there's
the cloud.
A sync program. But the only reason I've used Google Docs is if I'm on a Windows computer and I can't install LibreOffice, I can upload a LibreOffice document and then download it as, can't you download it as like a doc or at least open it up and view it.
Right. You can edit it too.
Yeah, but where Office, MS Office, you couldn't.
You have to import it, though. It won't open.
No, it, well, I mean, maybe
it won't open the
LibreOffice
document. It will give you the option to download it. Like, if you put LibreOffice documents in your Drive, you'll be able to download them to work on them. It won't open them. You have to actually convert them to the Google Doc format.
Right, okay.
What's the extension?
But it allows you to convert.
Is it like...
I don't know.
But it's where Office wouldn't let me convert it. It wouldn't even open it. So So that worked out really nice.
All right, so must be something with the kernel. Oh, wait.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
In the kernel news, there is no release candidate this week as of right now. The mainline remains 3.7, and there were two sets of stable updates on the three main stable kernels. So I'm only going to report the latest one, but they'll all be in my show notes. So on Thursday, February 14th, 2013, at 11:12:26 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharman released kernel 3.7.8 with 69 files changed, 536 lines inserted, 290 lines deleted. On Thursday, February 14th, 2013, at 11:12:53 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharman released kernel 3.4.31 with 48 files changed, 460 lines inserted, and 283 lines deleted. On Thursday, February 14th, at 2013, not at 2013, but in 2013, at 11:13 Pacific Standard Time, Greg Kroharman released kernel 3.0.64 with 27 files changed, 306 lines inserted, and 212 lines deleted. And my kernel developer quote of the week is from Greg Kroharman, and it is too funny. What he's referring to is the website Perl8.org and the fact that it redirects to Scalalang.org.
What?
The Scala language people, the Scala language people have bought the domain Perl 8 because Perl's not anywhere near 8 yet and said that Perl 8 would be Scala.
Okay. Because they're so advanced.
Right. I thought it was funny.
All right. Well, good. I'm sure a lot of people do. It was a little lost on me, but then I'm not that familiar
even
with Perl.
Even after I explained it?
Yeah. I'm so sorry.
Oops. Sorry for being so esoteric, but I thought it was funny.
No, I think that's great, Matt.
So.
That's your kernel news?
That's my kernel news.
All right.
So. Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
We have quite a few releases this week. Going back to Chakra.
Chakra?
Yeah.
Chakra? Not Chakra.
Chakra.
C-H-A-K-R-A.
Yep, and you know, go ahead, you talk about it, and I'll make my comment.
Well, it's their Chakra GNU Linux 2013.02. They were released on the 10th of February, and it's their brand new series featuring KDE 4.10.
Yeah, it's called Benz.
Benz, yeah.
Perhaps it's Mercedes Benz.
Or,
who knows?
Or are they getting the Benz from going down in the ocean?
Oh, or that. Although I think it might be spelled B-E-N-D-S.
Yeah, that's Benz.
Hey, but that's all right, though. We got it. We got it. And I don't believe that they still have their graphic package manager in place yet either, which has been, gosh, it's been like a year plus, I think. So.
Well, when you want to be totally bleeding edge the way Chakra is,
mm-hmm.
you know, some yeah. things suffer.
Yeah. yeah. So anyway, but that's Chakra.
Yeah. And going on the 12th, we have ROSA 2012. The desktop French gnome. Fresh gnome.
You know, a little beret. The gnome has a little
gnome.
A little beret.
A little beret with a cigarette hanging out of the left side of his mouth.
Yeah, okay.
Well, as you may remember, ROSA previously had a KDE version, and they had some really nice artwork for that. Well, now they have the gnome version. It's gnome 3.6.2. So, yeah, check it out. And then on the 14th, we have OS 4, 4.0 Enterprise. And OS 4 is Ubuntu-based with special enterprise features. Are you going to say something?
I was going to say, well, that sounded kind of breathless. It was exciting there. No, and actually these guys, they are apparently... They have this tradition that they do at the start of the year, or at least the first release of each year, is that they have a fundraiser. So they are hoping that people make a donation, any kind of donation, when they download OS 4. So that could be as little as a few dollars, and their goal is to raise, I think, around $5,000. And it's this fundraiser will continue for a month. But you know, you think about the work people put into these distros and software and everything. Throwing a few dollars via PayPal their way is really not a bad idea.
And speaking of donations, our friend Jonathan Nadu.
Yes, Sonar.
He's working on Sonar.
Yep.
That distribution for the...
We donated.
Physically Challenged.
The
we
show
did
donated.
Donate.
Yep.
They still need about 871 $5 donations to make their goal. So
that about matches our podcast download.
That was as of like sometime yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. If you got a couple of bucks, throw them Sonar's way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. And
right. Continuing on, also on the 14th, we have an updated version of Ubuntu. Their LTS now has, it's 1204.2. So they have updates for their long-term support.
Ooh.
And then we have Dream Studio. Also on the LTS updated version. So it's, Ubuntu 12.04.2.
Yeah, Dream Studio. I did take a look at their site. That distro. Now see, Tony, with your musical, you know, skill and knowledge and all that, that'd be something for you to use to.
Yeah.
I think you should,
yeah,
I think you should develop a song or intro like a.
Oh, I've,
you know, or outro or something.
I thought about it.
Get a hydrogen drum kit going.
Yeah. So, just a thought.
Yeah, yeah.
Because for those of you who don't know, Tony is a drummer.
I am. Yeah. Well, I'm a percussionist, not a drummer.
So you can play the piano?
Yes. I mean, I can read music, and I know where the keys are. I mean, I can play keyboards, like xylophone, marimba. So more than just drums.
All right.
Anyway.
I did not know that.
Uh-huh. Getting back to the distros this week, we have, on the 15th, we have Sabian Linux 11.
That's right, the Italian dessert distro.
What?
Really?
Yeah. I reviewed this distro.
Oh, that's right. I remember now.
Zabayon is an Italian dessert.
Italian dessert.
Ah,
yep.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Well, their default is GNOME-based. It's Gen 2 based with GNOME 3, KDE, Mate, and XFCE.
Yeah, and one thing they've got going is you can choose several MySQL flavors, including I didn't realize Google had Google MySQL, and of course MariaDB, which is a fork of MySQL.
There's a Google version of MySQL?
That doesn't surprise me.
Including Google MySQL.
I'm sure they've...
Yeah, I'm gonna do a little checking on that.
Yeah, they probably tweaked it to run on their, you know, their system.
Their cloud.
Yeah.
Their massive cloud.
Well, it's like parallel computing. Each one of their servers, we can talk about it some other time, but it's, I've seen videos and pictures. It looks pretty cool.
Okay.
Anyway, continuing on, we have Zorin OS 6.2 Lite. And this is, their updated version of the Ubuntu-based Lite distribution with LXDE, designed for new Linux users.
All right. All you new users.
Right. And the last one for this week, released on the 16th, was Manjaro Linux 0.8 Mate.
Where does that distribution come from?
Manjaro?
Chakra?
No, not what is its parent.
Oh.
What part of the world does it come from? Because whenever I hear Manjaro, I always think of Africa. You know, it sounds,
sounds
like an African name to me.
Right.
Sure.
I don't know.
I'll tell you where it comes from. It comes from Germany, France.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then.
Where did you
That's
find
a new
that?
Country.
Well, I'm
Formed
sure.
Formed
like,
by, I believe it's the Alsace region of France.
I'm sure the developers live in mostly Germany and France. That's why.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, easy. You just go to, you click on the name in, you know, in the little entry there that you've got in front of you, you click on the name that they, the link that's got the name on it, it'll pop you over to a page then that just lists the particulars.
Oh, yeah, I see origin, yeah, Germany / France.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So.
That's cool.
So where'd they get the name?
They have related websites, Manjaro Belgium, Manjaro Brazil, Manjaro France, and Manjaro Turkey.
And where did they get the name? You know, that I'm not sure.
We might be. We would be about half a year away from it if we, and that would just be from the start of it. But we're thinking about opening a data center
in France.
No, Turkey in Ankara.
Oh, that's in the south of Turkey, isn't it? There's a U.S. air base not too far from there, Incirlik.
Mm.
I had friends that were there. I know where it is. Hmm.
Cool.
Wow. So you,
we have a huge our biggest client for dedicated servers is out of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
A Turkish company or a Turkish entity?
A Turkish web host.
Oh, wow. I think that'd be an interesting place to visit.
They come here once a year, and my boss goes there once a year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Well, continuing on, we're going on to the top five of the week.
All right.
The distro of the week, according to DistroWatch, calculated by website hits per day.
Starting with number five is OpenSUSE with 1457.
And trending down.
Number four is Debian with 1472.
And trending down.
Number three is Magia. Number three again with 1872.
And trending down.
And number two, back into their old spot, is Ubuntu. With $23.99.
And trending up.
Excellent.
And at number one, the old faithful Mint.
Gotta love that minty goodness.
With $35.19.
And trending down.
He said reluctantly. I don't have it up in front of me, so I'm relying on you, man. All right.
All right.
Mary, what's on SDA 6 this week?
Well, I'll tell you what's on SDA. And actually, it was on SDA 6. It was on my Bemis hosting. I installed it in a couple different spots because I wanted to do some checking, but I couldn't get it to install in a virtual environment, which was very peculiar. And I don't know, it was, you know, clearly something going on with the video portion of it. And I don't know what it was. But anyway, Linpus Linux is on this week's review list. One reason I selected it is the name, Linpus. It's a distro with a name only a mother could love, or a Taiwanese company of the same name. While researching this distro, I learned that Linpus is more than just a Linux distro project. Linpus is a Taiwan-based Linux vendor with more than 200 employees split between its headquarters in Taipei and its branch office in Shanghai. So would Olympus be as lively as a dancing dragon at Chinese New Year? Or would it leave me feeling like last week's chop suey? Let's find out. First, the vitals. Of course, the name is Olympus Linux. The maintainer is Olympus Technologies, Inc. of Taiwan. The distro's latest birthday, well, Olympus Linux 1.9 Lite was announced on February 9, 2013. It's Fedora-based, so it uses RPM packages, as I found out. The kernel is, it's really a pretty late kernel. It's 3.7.2-4. And the review desktop is GNOME. I actually modified GNOME shell. Now, Olympus, first the live environment. Olympus boots to a polished, modified GNOME desktop. Unlike a lot of live environments for distros I've reviewed, the Olympus desktop displays a lot of stuff. Now, some people may consider it cluttered and distracting, but everything I saw on the desktop served a purpose. In the center, a help screen displayed the desktop layout hyperlinked to corresponding areas or pictures of the various desktop sections. There was also helpful tips for new users. Now, on the right side of the screen were several widgets, weather, calendar, constantly updating RSS feed, and an analog clock. These widgets are built using HTML5 and look good on the right side of the desktop. An edit icon allowed me to add or remove from a modest list, a modest selection of widgets. So I actually added a little cycling image thing, which because all I had were the desktop wallpapers, it just cycled through the wallpapers. But, you know, you could drop a bunch of images in there. Both my graphics and wireless were handled in, with the exception of that virtual machine I just mentioned, my graphics and wireless were handled perfectly by Olympus. No problems at all. Now, the familiar GNOME panel stretched across the top of the screen with the system tray icons in their usual position on the right. Battery, wireless, power, time, language, and another icon that opens to let you easily adjust commonly used components. For example, connection. You can instantly go from Wi-Fi to airplane mode. And this may be really part of the standard GNOME desktop, but it was nice that it was easy to get to. Also, you know, display, the volume lets you adjust either the mic or the speakers. And, of course, resolution were all there and available. Now, the defaults. The default browser is Chromium. And there also was an Internet, or in the Internet menu, there was an icon for the Chrome Web Store. There's Office Suite. There wasn't any installed, but LibreOffice 3521 was could be installed from the Application Center.
But it didn't install it?
It was not. In the live environment, it's not installed.
Oh, did you review the light version?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but I did install it as part of my further testing. The mail client, there was none, but you can install Evolution from the Application Center. And the file manager was Nautilus. After all, this is GNOME. Seeing that list, you might think that the pickings were mighty slim with Olympus Linux, but you'd be wrong. Olympus Linux, boy, that is so hard to say. has an application center that's as well stocked as Ubuntu's. At the top, a list of recommended applications includes such stalwarts as Firefox, Gmail, K3B, and even IsoMaster were available. I also expected to see an Office Suite in the recommended list, but instead there was just Emacs. Ah, yes.
Emacs.
Client. Yes. Ah, yes. Perhaps trying to rekindle the Vi versus Emacs discussions. Remember those?
Vi.
That's right. Emacs had all those crazy commands. Remember that?
Yeah.
Ooh. Anyway.
I never get my head around it.
Yeah.
One of our really top sysadmins at work, though, is a whiz on it, man. He is like the Emacs god.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That takes a lot. But Office Suite options were well represented. However, with LibreOffice and Abbey Word, and I appreciated the ability to only install individual LibreOffice components. Again, because they were all listed individually, and I installed, I think, LibreOffice Write, and that's all I got. So that was nice. But more on the Application Center later. Now, the install process, it was very slick and well-packaged. Unlike the distro I reviewed last week, Olympus Linux's install was a two-phased affair, starting with partitions and installing the OS in Phase 1, then collecting user information, etc. in Phase 2. At no time was I confused about the process or what to expect, which sometimes, I guess that's a little surprising. You know how it gets sometimes. You try to go through this stuff and it's like, what was that about? You know, it's confusing, but no, it's very well laid out. You could tell there's a company behind this.
Cool.
Which is what my next sentence said. You can definitely tell there's a lot of support behind this distro. However, I noted one annoyance. No option regarding the install of a bootloader. It was only during the end of install system wrap-up that I noticed a bootloader was being installed, which was Grub 2. But you remember last week how I overwrote my own install of Grub?
I did it again.
And I went back and I actually reinstalled to check and see if I missed some little thing. But no, you are not given the option.
It just installs it.
Because you think about it, it's for new probably new users,
right.
And I suspect that if you're putting it in,
what's it do about partitioning then?
What you end up doing is you get three options. One is to just use everything. I mean, just use the existing partitions. One is to wipe it all out and use one partition. And then there's a third option, which I can't recall off the top of my head. But I selected to use my existing partitions when I put it on the Bemis hosting laptop, and you slid it all in. I had a separate home partition. On SDA6, however, I put it all in one partition because I'm not going to mess around. But yeah, so once you do that, then it takes you into, Gparted, I think, fired up, and then you go into some familiar stuff. But yeah, they kind of keep that away, and you just, you know, they explain it, I thought, pretty fully what your choices are. Anyway, so I'm going to have to clean this up later.
Yeah.
But the install environment, it looks just like the live environment. No surprise. One thing I decided to do is beef up the dashboard, which is extremely easy to do. Now, those of you who use GNOME, GNOME 3 that is, know that on the left side you've got a little dashboard with frequently used stuff. And actually, I started to kind of like GNOME 3. Matt looks like he's ready to let me have it.
Well, Profus, too, it says that in Germany, if you buy an Acer laptop without an operating system, it comes with Linpus.
Yes. I'm not at all surprised because when I was doing doing my research, I noticed that a lot of people who have Acer laptops or Acer netbooks or whatever, that they had Linpus Linux on it. Or they had Linpus Linux questions. So, yeah, that makes perfect sense. So thank you very much. Let's see here. I decided to do is beef up the dashboard, which is extremely easy to do. Just click on any icon in the menu to add it to the dashboard. Any open program also appears there, so I added several to my favorites until it started to resemble Unity's left-sided toolbar, and removal is just as easy. And actually, I kind of like the fact that that's off on the left like that, and I may experiment with KDE and create a left panel one just to see if I can do it. Yeah, icon only, using that icon only widget. But, I kind of liked it. And what happened is I kept adding and adding because I wanted to see how it reacted. And of course it got a little smaller, in other words, it still allowed me to display all of them. They just started to decrease in size.
So it's like auto sizing.
Yeah, exactly. So you still had the full, set of your, app icons. They just got a little smaller each time. So.
Cool.
Yeah. Let's see here. So on the GNOME system settings tool, it still does not allow you to resize the window. A minor complaint of mine when I first looked at GNOME 3. The system settings look a little jumbled, and I consider that a black eye on an otherwise interesting looking desktop. You can't drag, the window opens to a preset size. At least it has on these two distros that I've had with GNOME, and you cannot resize it. I just think, because you got to use the scroll bar. You can't just pull it down. You just got to, it's just annoying. All right. I wanted to see whether I could play movies out of the box. So from the application center, I installed the media player, which Totem in this case. And it also appeared to pull in other supporting files and libraries. And again, this is Fedora-based, so there are RPMs that were pulled in and installed. I loaded a DVD movie and was prompted to open it in the media player. So far, so good. Then the unspeakable, an error. Either the DVD is encrypted and the decryption libraries are not or the decryption libraries are not installed, but there was no other information available how to fix this.
You probably just needed libdvds.
Yeah, well, that's
CSS or something like that.
Yeah, libdvd CSS 2.
Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly. Yeah. Yep. But here's the thing. Somebody who isn't, you know, and again, what I'm thinking here is that when the company puts it on Acer, or those folks probably take care of this. But if you're downloading just a distro yourself, just know that it's, you're going to have to take care of it yourself.
Well, a lot, you have to do that on a lot of distros because the codecs are locked up unless you get a distro that's based out of Ireland, because in Ireland they can put all the codecs in it.
Oh, yeah.
So, thus mint.
Thus mint.
Yeah. More minty goodness. Oh, yeah. Okay. So. Okay. That's a good point. I didn't fully realize that. But they, at least, as far as I'm concerned, could have had something in there that would pop up and just explain, hey, here's what you need to do. Because I knew what I needed to do. And then, of course, I went and I downloaded the RPM for it. And then I'm thinking, oh my God, am I going to go into dependency hell? And I did. Apparently there's some, it failed. So I didn't have time really to go in and figure out why it failed. But, I did attempt to install it and it failed. So I tried twice.
So that means that the dependencies it's looking for aren't even in the Linux repository.
Yeah. So anyway, and then I tried another thing too, is that when I downloaded the archive and opened it up, there was a README file in there. Now the README file had no extension .txt or anything. It was just README.
Because in Unix, you don't need an extension.
So I thought. I'm glad you said that, Matt. That was a great setup, and you went for it, and I'm glad you did. There was another roadblock, because in typical Windows fashion, it told me no application is available to open. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, so I was able to get it open. It's just a text file, but for some reason, it didn't recognize it. So I was disappointed in that.
Yeah.
But again, I was never able to get my movie to play.
You know, that's happening more and more lately with the dependency on the graphical environments. A lot of the the Linux stuff is starting to use file extensions.
Yeah, well,
looking at the header.
It kind of makes sense, but yeah, I think the headers are better. But even on Ubuntu and Mint, if you double click, try to open up a file that has no extension, and it'll detect whether it's a text file and says, do you want to run this as a script or do you want to, you know, view it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I never got the movie going. A little black mark for Limpus. Now, other interesting programs. Now, the application center that I spoke of earlier has hundreds of useful tools and apps, programs, et cetera. Actually, 453, but who's counting? But there aren't many reviews of them. All dressed up and nowhere to go. Probably because Limpus normally sits at the lower half of DistroWatch's hits per day list, because it's never, you know, it's down there, and again, it's pre-installed with these notebooks, and that may be part of the reason people just don't come back in here and do it. I have no idea, but there weren't a lot of reviews or anything. And there's some really good programs like FileZilla, which should be a 5-star program in my opinion. It didn't have very many reviews. Anyway, installing programs is very easy. Simply peruse the list and select your preference. The only real annoyance is that I had to install each program individually and authenticate each time. But patches
really,
were...
Really? There was no way to select multiple programs at an install?
No.
Not even if you held the control key while...
Well,
looking.
I didn't do that, but you know, they should have had... It should have been intuitive if it was.
Well, almost every program ever... If you hold the control key while clicking, it's multiple selections.
In Ubuntu's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like in the... Then
it could very well have been. I didn't do it. But still, even though I'm in there and actively using it, you should have like a grace period where you can install, in my opinion. in my humble opinion. But anyway, let me see where I was. Yeah, but patches were a different story. I was able to install patches without the need to authenticate. So, I mean, it just, yeah. I don't know if it kind of caught the tail end of my last one or something, but yeah, I was able to update without authenticating yesterday. So I thought that was kind of an interesting situation.
How did you do the updates?
Through
command line or?
No, it was through, a tool that they had.
A GUI interface.
Yeah, it was
If you're probably using their auto updater, it probably doesn't require authentication. It's already running as root.
Okay. Well, there you go. That's probably it.
Well, more likely, I think it'd sound like that because you were already doing something else under root or sudo it, that it already detected that you've authenticated.
Kind of what I thought. Saying.
Yeah,
yeah, it's kind of what I thought. So I
know a lot of times those auto updaters just run as root.
I know in Ubuntu and Mint, mm-hmm. it'll check for updates and then it'll tell you, do you want to install it? And then when you say yes, it pops
you.
Up and asks for
Does
a password.
Really?
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've used any of those auto updaters. I just do it all at the command line.
Right. I still I still use command line. But.
Yeah, yeah, me too. I actually do though.
Yeah.
I do. Half the time I do.
It's just so much faster.
Mm-hmm. I like watching it go through all the repositories, and it just looks impressive, all that stuff scrolling by. Wow, I must be doing something important. But anyway, all right, get back to this, because we're getting kind of into wrap-up mode here. Now,
wait a minute. While we're on that topic.
Which topic? Updates?
With the command line, I did it in a public place at a Panera Bread once, and I had somebody complain to the manager that I was hacking.
Really?
Yeah. So the manager came over and I had to tell him, no, it's just updates. Like, if you watch, you'll see that it's just
They thought you were hacking. That's funny.
Yeah, they've watched too many movies.
That guy has some kind of command line thing going. He's hacking somebody's website.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Jeez.
That's funny. That is funny. Anyway, okay, so back to the review. That's what I was doing, right?
Yeah.
All right, so Olympus conveniently had a category called web apps, which, you guessed it, contained the entire listing from Google's Chrome store. 253 things are in there. So yeah, they have it wrapped into their menu, which I thought was kind of
so you can use the Chrome apps right on.
Well,
does it install Chrome?
I Chromium.
Oh, okay.
Chromium's there. So what no doubt happens is that you'll install it and it installs it into Chromium, I'm sure.
Right.
But I thought it was kind of interesting they had the Chrome store as a separate menu item. Perhaps it was to fill it out a little more, because it was pretty, not a lot in there by default.
You were reviewing the light version.
That's true, I was. That's true, yep. So, some of the interesting programs, again, there's a ton in there. A couple that caught my eye. Well, I already mentioned IsoMaster, which is kind of nice. You can, use that to read, write, and modify ISO images. The Gen2 file manager, you ever heard of that one, Matt and Tony?
Say that again.
Gen2 file manager. You ever used it? You ever heard of it?
I'm assuming it's Gen2's file manager, but no.
Yeah.
No, it's Debian's.
No, when I installed Gen2 that one time, I used it, but
yeah.
I don't remember anything special about it.
I thought it would force me to a command line to install, but it didn't, actually. It opens a two-panel file manager with three rows of buttons across the bottom for common commands like copy, make, link, move, delete, make directory, rename, etc. There's actually 24 in all. Think of it as a right-click menu on display. More esoteric commands like link clone, select RE, and even split are available. On the left side are three shortcuts to root, home, and local. I mean, actually, that was kind of a nifty little file manager.
Yeah.
You know,
actually,
little...
I've been looking for something like that. And I know, like, Midnight Commander is similar to that, but that's command line. So I'll look into that.
Yeah, but it's
Crusader.
Doesn't Midnight Commander have a graphical version also?
You have to install case stuff.
I don't know.
I think Midnight Commander has a graphical version also.
I'll look that up.
Check out Gen2 file manager. Another thing on there they had was Coot, which was, it's a macro molecular model builder for macro molecular model builders.
Say that five times fast.
I had to read it very carefully because I wanted my little joke to be there, but very little. And then there's also something called Blue Proximity. Have you guys heard of that?
No.
Okay. What it does is it locks and unlocks your desktop using a second Bluetooth device.
Oh,
like
yes,
phone.
I actually have. I never mentioned that.
Blue Proximity.
You tie it to, like, your phone, and then when the phone's by the laptop, it's unlocked and usable, and if the phone walks away, it locks.
Yeah.
So,
that is cool.
It's called Blue Proximity, so you might want to look into that.
Wow. That is really cool.
It is.
Yeah.
And I actually tried to set it up, but for some reason, I don't know if my Bluetooth module, the Bluetooth stuff wasn't up and running, and I thought, I'm going to try to get this going, and I did a few little things trying to get it going. I just couldn't, and again, that's because I didn't have time to do it, but I'm going to see if I can get that going in Kubuntu. But anyway, there's also something called Yum Extender. Sounds like something you use after a full meal with a tight belt. But no, it's a graphical front end for Yum.
Yes.
So overall, I found Linpus to be a really usable distro, aside from those little things that I mentioned. I think most notably is its inability to play DVDs, which I think for most users, being able to play a movie on your laptop is something that you should be able
to
do.
That's true, but that's with most distributions.
Most distros, yeah. You're right. You're right. But again, it's polished. I think the only other downside is that they don't really have a community forum there on the Linpus site. Instead, you've got Linpus questions that are in a number of different places, which, you know, certainly will get you answers, but I did not find one.
Did you find that there really was no community, that it was all that company?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. They had an FAQ there that kind of didn't answer my question. I mean, tried, but didn't quite, so I ended up Googling stuff. But again, the desktop itself is well put together, very usable.
You know, I think they want...
3.2.
I think they want... They're aiming more at the corporate customer.
Yeah, I would not be surprised. Yeah. So anyway, but yep, I was, and the biggest thing out of this is that I really like that GNOME dashboard on the left. That dash, I really liked it. So anyway, but that's Linpus Linux, a nice, full service, solid distro.
Well, all right.
Very okay. Cool.
Whew, that was long.
All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good review, Mary. Did you give us the final?
Yeah, 3.2. Yeah. I mean, it's...
That's a good review.
I don't even
know.
For me, stuff barely gets out of the twos, you know?
That's a good review.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I wanted to acknowledge the fact that it, you know, had been put together pretty well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, their App Center was really nice. So.
That's really cool. Okay. I like the idea of rolling in the Chrome apps in with it.
Mm-hmm. That is nice.
I'll have to look to see. I mean, have you looked at their list of apps? Is there anything?
Yeah, I use a couple of them.
Chrome apps?
Yes. I use
CryptoCat, right?
FinRDP is a Chrome app, and it makes your Chrome makes your Chrome browser into an RDP client.
Oh, wow.
And ThinVNC, same thing for VNC.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Kindle's Cloud Reader and
Kindle
and Access Now by Ericsson. It's a secondary authentication type program.
Huh.
Oh yeah.
I have Solitaire. I got that Chrome remote desktop. Have you done that yet?
Oh right.
I have not. ThinRDP is what I use.
I mean, she's talking about remote desktop where somebody can remote into your computer using it.
Yeah.
No, I have
not. Well, let's install it. We could test it after the show.
Okay, we'll do it.
I think you'll find it. I've done it. I've used it, I think, once or twice, and it works.
Yeah.
And then I've got...
It's cross-platform.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
Yeah. And then I've got that CryptoCat, which I haven't really used much of, and then a bunch of games.
Games?
Yeah. Angry Bird? No, I took that off. I'm done with it.
I have Angry Birds on my phone, but not on my desktop.
I got it on my tablet. But they come out with a bunch of new areas, so
I don't play it very often. I'm not a game player.
Yeah, I'm not a big game player either. I play the little games. All right.
Mahjong is about as...
Yes, I do like that.
Yeah, I like Mahjong. There's one, Enlightenment, I think, or Enlighten...
Entanglement.
Entanglement, yeah. I play that. That's really cool.
Yeah. I forgot that one. Then you have to pay, I think, to get more.
Yeah. Well, it still gives you a lot to play with.
Complaining about? I just a few minutes ago, I was saying, hey, donate, blah, blah, blah. I still believe that, though.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
First up, we have there is a new website that ranks distributions.
Ooh.
No.
This website is called DistroRank.
Oh. I thought you were just a little behind with that stuff.
No.
It's DistroWatch.
No.
DistroRank.
DistroRank. And they had their first ranking of the distros on 2/14 of this year. This This is how they describe themselves in their tagline. A weekly study of the relative popularity of Linux and BSD operating system distributions. The website appears to be the creation of one person, as it is entirely written in the first person. However, nowhere on the site does it say who it is. The first ranking is signed with the name Ion. A who is search on the domain name shows that the registrant's identity has been privatized. We can see that the name was registered with the melbourneit.com as the who is search redirects there. Since the domain is registered there, it's most likely hosted at melbourneit.com.au, making it an Australian website. Here is how he describes his ranking system. Using multiple factors that a reasonable person attributes to the popularity of something, I have developed a point system. The most popular distro in raw points is used as the 100th percentile benchmark. All other distros' raw points are converted to a percentage of that and ranked accordingly. He goes on to list his methodology as using numbers of several search engine results, number of news articles about the distro, percentage of servers reported running the distro, percentage of desktop users reported running the distro, and the various sources used in the data collection include Google, Bing, Netcraft, and DistroRank user data. Because if you sign up, you're asked to please tell him what distribution you're running.
I did.
So, cool. I did not. He goes on to say he understands that his methodology is not perfect and asks for suggestions to improve it. You can send him email at distrorank@gmail.com. So, let him know.
Yeah, I looked at where Magia is, number 18.
Yeah, he only does 20, what would be the top 20 distributions.
Mm-hmm. And one thing, I seem to, when I provided my information, as I recall, I think my IP address was recorded. And so
that's probably so that you can only report once.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
can't stuff
common.
The ballot box.
Right.
Yeah. No, no. And I only wanted to say that just to confirm that indeed that they seem to be trying to prevent that.
You right.
Know, multiple votes.
So we'll see. He's also asking for advertisers. So next up, is your distro obsolete according to Chrome? Maybe. Chrome and Chromium rely on the version of GTK installed to determine if your distro is obsolete. The version they are checking for should be at least 2.24. Well, what's an enterprise distro to do, as they tend to not update the versions of things often, as evidenced by these versions? RHEL 6's version of GTK is 2.8, Debian 6's version is 2.20, and Ubuntu Lucid 10.4 LTS is 2.2. The warning message that was originally displayed, Google Chrome is no longer updating because your operating system is obsolete, has been changed.
So there.
It has been changed to Google Chrome has stopped updating and no longer supports this version of your operating system. That does not, however, alleviate the problem that Chrome and Chromium are no longer going to receive security updates. Hopefully Google will change the way they discover your OS version, but they have announced no plans to do so. Next up, we have the Python name in danger of being hijacked in the EU. A UK-based company is attempting to trademark the name Python, basically for anything having to do with computers. The company established the website python.co.uk approximately 13 years ago. At that time, no one was really looking at trademark issues. All that domain did originally was redirect to the company's websites, viber.co.uk and pobox.co.uk. The current information on the Python blog at pyfound.blogspot.com just says that we contacted the owners of python.co.uk repeatedly and tried to discuss the matter with them. They blew us off and responded by filing the community trademark application, claiming the exclusive right to use Python for software, servers, and web services everywhere in Europe. However, when I went to the site on Saturday, February 16th, it redirected to python.org. Now, I don't know if this was the work of vigilantes or the work of the hijacker. The viber.co.uk website would not resolve, maybe due to a DDoS attack, and the pobox.co.uk website was up and running. The Python people were made aware that threats had been made against the hijacker and have posted this notice on their blog. However, it has come to our attention that the organization with which we are currently involved in a trademark dispute has been receiving messages from our community members, including threats. We ask that no matter who you support in this matter, that you remain civil in your communications and actions. So, if you want to help, here is what you should do. This is what you can do. One, do you work for a company that uses Python? Two, are you in the EU? Do you hire in the EU? Or do you have an office in the EU? And three, could you write a letter on company letterhead that we can forward to our EU council? What they want you to say. Just give a brief description of how Python is used in your company, how your company looks for and recognizes Python as only coming from the PSF, and your view that another company using the term Python to refer to services, software, and servers would be confusing. So let's give the Python guys some support there and try and save that name. If this company is successful in hijacking the name Python, that's just a horrific thing as far as
I'm concerned. Bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. So.
And lastly, we have Microsoft shoots itself in the foot again.
Again.
If you thought Windows 8 was bad.
How many feet does it have?
I don't know.
It's run out.
But if you thought Windows 8 was bad, wait to hear what they're doing with Office. Office 2013's license is going to be tied to a single piece of hardware.
I heard that.
If the machine dies or you upgrade, there is no uninstalling and reinstalling it on another machine. This makes the new Office license the same as a Windows OEM license. Microsoft has an answer to this, however. You could go with Office 365.
Yeah.
This is tied to the user, not the hardware, and can be used on 5 PCs and 4 Macs. With the payment model being a subscription, you will wind up paying more for it than a single copy of regular Office. With models like these, OpenOffice and LibreOffice become more and more attractive.
Well, I think I told you my company had a discount package for Office 2013, and on the one Windows computer that I have to run because of some apps, I put it on there because it was so cheap. It installs everything, and of course the PC it's on is old.
It was probably the enterprise version.
It might have been. It had everything. But the PC it's on is old, so I'm just thinking, well, that may not have been a wise choice, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, but it's tied to the hardware, so if you ever... It's,
yeah.
And the new prices for it are going to be $140 for student and graduating up to enterprise at $400.
Jeez.
Really?
Yes.
Well, that's their average prices right now. I mean, that's...
Student Office? Right now is $99.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh?
You can get home and student for $99.
Hmm. Or you can get LibreOffice
for free
for a nice modest donation of a few dollars,
right,
which isn't even required.
No,
but
it's not
do
required.
It, but
yep.
You should do it.
That's right.
Okay.
So that's all the news I have.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. Pretty good stuff. Let's see, what do I got? I have my KDE corner, but. I think it's on Thursday or Friday, I posted something to Google Plus, on the EFF that, they, have recommended that the U.S. Patent Office, require that any patent, applications or patent applicants, that they submit working code with their patent application, their software patent application. So that, the idea behind this is that it's going to prevent, software trolls from, you know, submitting these broad patents copyright that patent ideas are just...
Right. This goes to something Obama is promoting, which I actually am surprised I agree with him on something, but...
Oh my God, that pig just flew by.
Yeah,
I just saw that pig fly by, did you?
Yeah, he made a statement about patents earlier this week and how if the company is not producing anything, why should they be allowed to sue people who are producing something to protect a patent that they own? You shouldn't be allowed to protect a patent unless you're using it for production purposes. And I agree with that 100%.
Yeah, that's a good point. So now the fact that he said that, hopefully then will turn into some kind of action at the patent office or that the legislative branch of the federal government can take and turn into some kind of a law or rule or something.
It was a great idea.
Yeah, good. Okay, so that was my one item. Few things from KDE Corner quickly. There was a release of an improved transform tool for CRITA. Now, apparently, and I guess they were only going to do this if they got enough donations, which they did do. There was a problem with some some complex mathematical algorithms, apparently this very smart guy was able to resolve, which allowed the release of it. I watched a video of this transform tool and it is spectacular. You identify, you know, you've got a graphic and you identify control points and like they had this picture of this lady that wasn't smiling and they had made her smile. I mean, it was just incredible what this thing will do. And you just think about the mathematics that are going on, you know, behind the scenes, the calculations to shift all this, but to make it look like it was the original. I mean, it was really impressive. So that's available. Kubuntu LTS update for Kubuntu was released. I guess that's not KDE. Well, it is KDE. It has KDE in it. 12.04.2. I got a link to that. And then they also released Ringtail Alpha 2 was released for testing. Got a link for that. There's a call for presentations and registration for Academy 2013. Now, this year's conference occurs over 7 days. That's July 13th through the 19th, 2013. I guess I'll be putting that in my convention scene. Sort of a convention. In lovely Bilbao, España. They'll also be hosting the QT Developer Summit about in the middle of the conference. So sounds like it'll be a lot of fun out there in España. Conversine 053 was released. That's, of course, an open source project that allows you to do quite a bit of things with images. It converts, I mean, I think it supports more than 100 different image formats, so they just released an update there. And then there was an issue for those of you who use Kate and have in the past appreciated its ability when you highlight a word that it highlights that word.
It highlights them all.
Yes. Well, apparently.
I use Kate all the time.
Yeah, well, there's a little issue with that.
Oh, no.
The plugin that highlights all instances of a selected word, apparently it's got a little bit of a bug. With the release of KDESC 410, there was some concern that it had been removed. But the good news, it's not the case. There was a small bug that prevented it from loading. So it's expected to be fixed in the next maintenance release of KDE. That would be 410.1. So any of you who have noticed it's gone, look for it shortly.
I have not because I'm not running 410.
So. Oh, okay. Yeah, I am. And I did notice it. I tried to do that highlighting, and it's not there. So anyway, those are my newses and my newses.
Your newses.
My newses.
Mary did the newses.
That's right. I did my newses. I didn't do your newses. But anyway, that's mine for this week. And
cool.
Tony?
I had one thing I was doing this week. I decided I want to buckle down and study to get my my LPI exam and get the cert. So I am... I subscribe to a website, Linux Academy, and they have a bunch of videos and PDFs and stuff that you can go on and it walks you through everything from first time logging into a Linux server to administering and writing backscripts.
Really? I was looking at that, Tony, and I didn't see anything that was like dedicated to the LPI or the RHCSP.
You mean like teaching the test?
No. No, and that's I understand that. It doesn't say, you know, it's just I'm looking for a lot of what I'm missing because I've been using Linux for a long time. It's just there's a lot of commands and bash scripting that I don't know. So I'm looking for, you know, that kind of thing that can, you know, give me a little bit more of the history and a little other information that that just reading, because I'm not good at reading a book. I'm more of like a lecture-based kind of person. I need to go in and see somebody using it, and so that's why I like this.
That's why I've been kind of, I'm trying to study for my RHCSA exam, and I'm finding reading the book very hard. I want to try and find some type of a lecture series that helps out with that. But
yeah.
I have not been successful, so.
Oh, and Keith,
I'm also interested in that. So if you find it, you know, we can go in together or something on what, if we need to. Yeah.
Yeah, and Keith just asked in the chat, he said, anyone else doing any LPI? He's thinking about it, but we'll probably do Red Hat, RHCSE this year
That's
instead.
That's what he said, yeah. But
okay. All right. I think Matt's going to respond, are you? I have a command for you, though, Tony, that'll help. I mean, maybe this will be helpful.
Okay.
Sudo bang bang.
Oh, you know, I use that all the time.
I had never heard of it.
Yeah, I never heard of it until about a year ago, and Matt was talking about it.
Yeah. And for those of you
talking about it,
yeah,
I for some reason
maybe,
am not
maybe 2 years ago,
I'm not remembering this.
What
you go ahead?
Oh, well, no, you go ahead because you probably
you either gave a presentation or used it during your presentation at the LUG meeting, and it's where if you run a command
and
you forget
yeah.
that you gotta either be root or
right you do so, sudo bang bang and then it runs the previous command as sudo.
Yeah.
I remember now.
Yeah, I do it all the time because I always forget because there's so many times where I'm doing things like that and I'll just sudo in as su and then I do everything's in you know as root and then I'll sit down and then the next day and try to do something that's not working. I'm like, oh yeah. So sudo
bang
bang, and I'll run the last one. That's,
right.
And that's cool.
I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
And, so. And bang bang, if you're not familiar with the command line or the verbiage, it's exclamation exclamation.
Oh yeah, that's a good point. That's right. You don't type B-A-N-G.
Right.
Twice. Or maybe I would have, but anyway, yeah, that was my, it's my tool.
Cool.
Well, it's not a tool, but it was just a little comment for you, you know, for your. So, are we going to crack open the SMLR toolbox this week?
We are.
All right. So, well, let's crack it open.
Yeah, go ahead. Mary.
Like those growlers last week. This is Sunday morning, so it's coffee. It's not a growler. And I'm glad that you guys jumped on this too, so I wouldn't be left here to explain it all myself. But, I've been, thinking that my laptop temperature is just a little too warm because the fan runs. It seems to run. It's not doing it this morning, though. I don't know why. But the fan runs. It just seems warm. And I wasn't really sure what the temperature was. So what I did a little checking, and I discovered LM-sensor is a way for me to monitor the – well, I think it'll do a number of things for you. But I was able to use it for checking the temperature of my CPU, and not only that, I think also your graphic.
I've got all the sensors installed and running that my laptop supports, and I have Temp 1, which is a temperature on the inside of your laptop, which is running at 59 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
Then my CPU core 0.
59 degrees Fahrenheit?
My CPU core 0 is running at 133 degrees Fahrenheit. My core 1 is running at 135 degrees Fahrenheit. My current BOGO MIPS on my CPU is running at 800. And
are you going to put a screenshot to that in the show notes?
No.
Oh.
And my RAM, wow. Of my 4 gigs, I'm currently using 1.5 gigs.
Mm-hmm.
And my CPU state is that I am 97.8% idle, with 1.7% being used by the users and 0.5% being used by the system. And I've been up for 2 hours and 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that tool. And I couldn't, unfortunately, I think you said you were able to get the graphic front end installed on that.
Sensors.
Yeah, I, it's not in my repository. I have to go out looking for it. Mm. But I just.
Shocking.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I was shocked.
I know, because you've got the special KDE repositories and everything installed.
Well, but that's for Project Neon.
Oh.
Okay. And I'm not in Project Neon right now, but I'll go over there and check. But yeah, so, but the critical piece that I needed was there. But that's, LM, that's Lima Mike dash sensor.
Yeah. Yeah, I use it also. And, the graphical interface I use is P sensor. And it'll show you can check hit a check mark for which sensors you want showing and it sees my CPU video actually it has 11 different temp sensors in this computer. I'm not sure what they all are sensing. It just says temp stuff. 1, temp 2, and fan 1 and then it shows the two CPU core 0 and core 1 which are currently at 49 degrees Celsius.
And have I think to change it to Fahrenheit.
I looked and I didn't see it.
You said one of yours was 59 degrees Fahrenheit.
It is.
That's, and then the one next to it is 135.
That's the actual core of the processor is running at that temperature.
It's running at, and really? Then, that
and
is
then
cool.
Just the temperature inside my laptop is 59 degrees.
Yeah, that's
Tony,
pretty
your
cool.
Basement is warmer than that. Wow, you got very efficient heating, or I mean cooling going on that laptop, Matt.
Yeah, I don't know. Cup of coffee spilled in there the other week.
Apparently.
Yeah. Well, I had a problem where I thought either my video or my CPU was overheating. So I started using it then. It was a couple months back, and it seemed to be fine. I mean, and just seeing the temps, it really doesn't help you much unless you know either like a baseline or what to avoid. So in the past, I was working on a computer that was overheating a lot, and it was hitting like 90, 95 Celsius.
Yeah.
Which
you start getting up around 200 centigrade, or just under two, like 180, 190 degrees Celsius. Fahrenheit.
I was going to say
200
Fahrenheit.
Centigrade.
Fahrenheit.
That's like the sun. Gosh. Hot as the sun.
I was having a massive brain cramp, but no, that's where it starts to get flaky. That's where your processor starts to flake out.
All right. So. Well, I'm actually installing P sensors right now. Actually, it prompts you, it wants to know, your local host, which of course is 127.001, but it also, apparently listens on a port or something.
Mine didn't. Mine.
I don't know how.
With, when I installed LM sensors, it ran a script.
Too freaky. I'll take it off.
It ran a script and went through and looked for all the sensors that were available on my laptop.
That's probably because maybe it's viewable in a browser.
Well, on the ISA bus, usually.
Okay.
And even though you have no ISA slots, you still have an ISA bus.
I read that. I was looking for something, and I read that. It might have been, LM Sensors just doing the research for this. So, all right. Well, that's it. Yeah, it was very helpful tool, though, just to track temperatures of stuff if you have got a little bit of a concern. So, and that's LM-Sensors or K-Sensors.
Well, yeah, I installed all the LM sensor packages and K sensors at the same time. I don't know if you install K sensors, if it's going to act as, if LM sensors will act as a dependency and it'll pull it down or not. But
Cool. Yeah, Keith says to run netstat and you can see what port it's running on or what it's doing.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea. Yep, that's right. Oh, P sensor. I've got it started here. Yep.
He's thinking of maybe 60
degrees centigrade. Temperature on whatever temp one is, it varies from 60 degrees to 63 degrees centigrade. Sounds a little warm, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you have your laptop is, well, higher end, so I can see it. It'd be okay if it's running. Oh, it's a little warm, but it's not
temp
bad.
Temp one is just inside the case.
Okay.
I think mine has to be right in front of the fan.
That could be.
That's why it's so low.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. All right. Anyway.
Now it's time for Mary's quiz show. Is it alive?
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the one that had that quote that I happened to listen to the show. I wanted to listen to that one especially because it was so hilarious. That guy's release announcement. Remember the one that he said, no one uses this anyway? So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I never did mention the name of the distro, so I thought, good, I'm going to... Oh, that might be extra credit.
If you can figure out which one it was.
At the very end, that's right, at the very end, you'll have to tell me which one of these distros was
that one.
Yeah, how about that? So you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, the first one, I challenge you guys. This week is not Twist Week, so we're straight up. Is it alive or dead?
All right.
All right.
The first one is Rhino Linux. R-H-I-N-O Linux.
Rhino Linux.
Rhino.
Alive.
Use it in a sentence.
I installed Rhino Linux. How's that? Did that help you? Install it.
Can I have
in a
definition,
sentence?
Please. Definition, please.
That's pretty funny, Matt.
I'm going to say dead.
Rhino Linux is an operating system, which means it is the software that manages the programs and data. Ouch, you hit that drum head, that
no,
bass
I did,
drum.
That
oh, okay. All right. Anyway, so yeah, it is, it's alive. It's alive. It's a, you know, we used to have that little sound clip. It's alive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. What happened to those?
I don't know. Ask Tony. Okay. He's the one that edits. All right. You ready? The next one is Barafa Linux.
Alive.
Dead.
Barafa Linux server is a free Linux distribution. Is it? Okay. There you go. Yep. It's actually was based on Slackware. So, all right. So, that's right. So Matt said alive. Tony said dead. All right, the next one is Beernix.
Beernix?
Beernix.
Beernix.
B-E-E-R-N-I-X. I saw that, and I said, yes, baby, we're going to use this one. Because, see, I thought it was going to, you know, I thought would do this with the Growler Week when we were drinking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When we were drinking during the show.
Beernix.
I'm going to say dead.
I think it's alive.
You're looking at her laptop.
No, I can't see
it. He can't see it. He cannot see it. He got it wrong. So let him look, right? Yeah, it was a Linux operating system for desktop use. It's no longer available. You can't find it anywhere. And Tony was wrong on that one. Sorry, Tony. Okay, the next one is, it is Linux.
It is Linux?
Oh, that's got to be dead.
That... It, yeah, and would you like?
I'm gonna go alive.
Did you want me to spell it for you, Matt?
No, I'm gonna go alive.
All right. What'd you say?
I said dead.
All right. It is Linux is a project actively supported by Linux Lab. It's an information technology solution with the help of our sponsors, including it's a foreign distribution. So the sentences, you know, have that little foreign flair to them. So it is alive, Matt. You got that right, Tony. Tony.
Oh, no.
Just think of last week when I smacked him down big time, you know. That'll make you feel better. All right, the next one here is mutagenics.
Mutagenics?
Yes.
Mutagenics?
That's on. Yeah.
That's dead.
I'm going to say alive.
Flatlining.
Oh.
It's dead.
Oh, man.
All right, but this week is the week where you can get... Oh, you know what we should do is...
Yeah, but you can only get 1 point of extra. He's down by three.
Oh, no.
Tony, and you're kind of like Matt this week.
I'm going to say that the distribution in the quote is...
Hang on, we're not done yet. Okay. One more.
Oh, okay.
Athene.
Athene.
Yeah, alive.
Athene Linux was a commercial operating system developed by Rocklight Systems. It had one release on DistroWatch back in 2004. It's dead. So you both got that wrong.
Could you do me a favor? Run the list, just the list of the distros down again.
All right.
Are we at the end or?
That's it. That was it.
Okay, yeah,
okay, I'm going in reverse order from the way I read them before. Athene. Mutagenix. It is Linux. Beernix. Barafa Linux. Rhino Linux.
I'm going to say that the quote comes from Barafa Linux.
That's what I was thinking, too.
You are correct. It was Barafa Linux. That's right. Yeah, and for those of you who didn't listen last week, this poor gentleman was supposed to get help testing, got hardly any help, and he won't be able to... It's going out with bugs that he will not be able to fix. I had zero testers, and he said, so I suspect there may be more undiscovered bugs. You can email me any repeatable test cases. I'll do my best to fix them. But as he said at the very end, since nobody uses this distribution anyway, it doesn't really matter, I guess. So here you go. So there it is. And join us next week, which will be Twist Week. I already have my twist that just occurred to me, which I'm not going to tell you, for another edition of Is It Alive? Okay.
All right.
Congratulations, Matt. I guess you've regained the...
Yeah.
For those of you who are listening and not viewing, I'm doing my happy dance in the chair.
I thought it was the Egyptian walk like an Egyptian
dance.
No, it's
my happy dance.
Sit like an Egyptian.
It's listener feedback time.
And we have a listener feedback line. And that number is
313-626-9140. And
I got Kevin's.
Kevin. Oh yeah. Yeah, what did he say?
Let me pull it up. It had to do with the Cyrillic alphabet.
Yes. He wanted to tell us that it is not Greek.
Yes.
We knew it wasn't Greek, Kevin.
That's all right. It's neither Greek nor Latin, but it does have some characters that look like Latin. But it doesn't sound like Latin either. Yeah, and that is true. But he had a little interesting comment. The word alphabet comes from the Greek letters alpha and beta, which are the first two letters, alphabet. Right. I did not know that. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So thanks, Kevin, for sharing that with us. That was a kind of cool little trivia thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
And then we also have feedback from Brent again, who's setting up our crowdsourced listener feedback section.
Oh, no, our crowdsource, Is It Alive?
Is It Alive, that's it. Is It Alive, sorry.
Yeah. Here, I can play.
Hey, guys, it's Brent Smith in Raleigh, North Carolina. Just wanted to give you a little bit of feedback. In the last episode, Tony had mentioned that you had changed the embedded player for the playback of the episodes from the website. And it's actually a lot better. I'm kind of time shifting. I'm not able to listen to the show live, so I thought that was kind of a nice addition, and the page does load a little bit faster, so thanks for that. And in fact, I just wanted to say thank you in general. I've moved to Linux just basically in the last year, and listening to the shows actually give me a pretty good context for what Linux is about. Mary's review has been really helpful as far as what distros, you know, might I want to run and which ones should I stay far, far away from. But the news and all the other material is really good. You know, Matt, Tony bring a lot to the table. So anyway, I wanted to say thank you to you guys for that. Lastly, I wanted to mention that for everybody who is looking to participate in the crowdsourced Is It Live segment that's going to be on next week, get your submissions in. The email address that these can go out to, you just send them over to me. My email address is brentsmith@pobox.com. That's brentsmith@pobox.com. So if you'll send those over to me, we've got a list of some that are, I think, adequate. In fact, dare I say, even challenging. But more are always welcome. So please do send those in, and hopefully we'll be talking to you guys next week. Thanks.
He sent two different OGG files.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One was the test.
Just the initial test.
And then the other one is like an example of how he would do the show.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the first one is when I started playing. And
I thought it was the second one, the most recent one he sent.
It is. It's Brent Smith@pobox.com.
Yeah, I knew it was Pobox.
Brent Smith@pobox.com.
Yep. POBOX.com. Say that again, Matt.
Brent Smith. BRENTSMITH.
All together as a single string of characters.
Yep. Lowercase. @POBOX. POBOX.com.
What would happen, Matt, if they used uppercase?
It would still go to him. I don't know.
It would.
It's case insensitive.
I don't know. Did you know that Google Mail Gmail is dot blind?
I don't know what that means.
What's dot mean?
My email address has a dot in it.
Yeah.
And it's at gmail.com. If you put my email address, my name without the dot, it still comes to me.
Oh.
It's dot blind.
What's nice about that, though, is that you can put dots in there to kind of separate.
Yes.
Elements, like your first and last name.
Right. That's what I do.
Oh, that's pretty good. That's interesting. Thank you for sharing that. Okay. Any other feedback, Tony?
I think that's all that I had. I think that was it.
Featured music of the week.
Oh, we do. I sent it.
Yeah, Mary sent it, but I could not bring it up. It's a bluesy thing.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Oh, my God. Chernobyl? Can we hear that again?
Yes, we should use Chernobyl.
No.
Oh,
Chilean death metal.
Chilean death metal.
Hey, Matt, I'll tell you what. when you run the show by yourself next time, when Mary and I have to be out, you can play that as music, all right?
There you go. Okay.
Oh, wait, here we go. I believe I'll dust my broom.
Wrap this baby up.
All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 71.
Bombardment from space.
And I have tomorrow off.
This is Tony Bemis.
Matt Enders.
And Mary Tomich.
Saying have a good week. See you next week. What?
That's
oh
what
my
it says.
God. I cannot believe we're using something called I Will Dust My Broom.